Good morning, New Covenant, or whenever you might be listening to this teaching. My name is Jeff Trask, and as always, it is an honor and privilege to be able to share with you today. A lot of things to cover. It's been a while since I taught last, and I thank everyone for your support during my time away. And I got a lot of things done and accomplished, but also had a good time to slow down and relax as well. Speaking of which, I just like to kind of hit some highlights that took place in the last few months. Don't have time to cover everything. I'll just kind of hit a few things. If you look and follow along with the slides, you'll see the first one is a picture of us at the town hall meeting at Church of Living God on June 4th. Had a great event, Reparations Town Hall with speakers and about 90 or so people attended. Another opportunity for the community to get to know more about reparations. The next picture or slide you'll see is one of me in Tulsa, Oklahoma. Tisa and I attended that event where the mayor of Tulsa, in memorial to those who were massacred in the Tulsa massacre, announced the releasing of documents about the massacre and also the goal of privately raising over $100 million for reparations there. The next slide you'll make, if you're following along, we'll see is one of the Independent Media Center, where we put up a display of first repairs, reparations, progress, I guess you can call it, different cities, different people, different places that are doing different things about reparations across the country. And it was up at the Independent Media Center over the summer, where we also had a nice event, panel event I participated in as well. Next slide you'll see is the October 4th public hearing that took place at Krannert. Along with the state reparations group there, we had another great event with that. A lot of information being shared, a lot of great speakers. Had a decent amount of folks attend, as much as I like, but it was still a good turnout. It was very much similar to other smaller communities across the state that we've done this in. And again, another wonderful opportunity for people to get to know about reparations. The next slide happened just about a week or so ago at the CCDA conference, where I did a workshop on reparations. But the highlight for me was the opportunity for my daughter Asia and I to be on stage, as we are the first intergenerational family to be both part of a cohort, CCDA cohort. I was part of cohort 3 in 2011 or so. And then Asia has recently been accepted into the next cohort. I can't remember what number it was, but they decided to highlight that. So we had a little bit of time on stage to kind of talk about our experience and the anticipating experience that Asia is going to have with the cohort. So that was pretty cool time. The next picture is one that's not related to reparations, but it was pretty vital. I'm in Springfield with a couple of lobbyists and our state rep, Representative Ma, and Executive Director Melissa McGuire from the Illinois Association for Free Trouble Clinics, where we were able to do a public hearing and secure another year of $9 million for free and trouble clinics across the state of Illinois. And then the last update picture I'll show is me and my son James at a Cubs game. I haven't been to a Cubs game in years, and I couldn't have ended up going to a better game. It turns out that we went there on the 4th of July against the Cardinals, no less. And the Cubs set a franchise record for home runs, hitting 8 home runs in that game. So one of the best games that anyone could have attended probably in years. So that was pretty fun. So on the update set, I'd like to get into our teaching, which titled Freedom Beyond Understanding, God Being Present in Our Prison, in Our Prisons. It stems from the teaching coming out of Acts 12, which is basically the story of Peter being in prison and ultimately escaping prison from the grips of King Agrippa, pun intended. So I want to talk about the idea of the ordinary horrific. I got that term from this book I've been reading called Ebony and Ivy, and it just kind of had a subtitle called The Ordinary Horrific. And I thought that was pretty fitting when we consider this idea of being in prison. And what we're going to do is look at various examples of God's presence in these various types of prisons and then pick up on some tools how we can survive and thrive through all of that. So we'll begin with Peter. And as mentioned, King Agrippa imprisoned Peter. And it's important to actually kind of get some context here. So we already know that King Agrippa was imprisoned for Peter because previous to that, he had imprisoned James, the brother of John, who was ultimately murdered. And King Agrippa was trying to get favor among the elite of the of this day. And so killing James kind of showed him getting some favor. And so he figured, you know, let me go ahead and keep doing this. So he decided to kill Peter as well. And I think it's also important to understand that what we're talking about, the scripture says that James was killed by the sword. But what that actually meant for those days, that it was basically a state ordered execution via a beheading and, you know, very public type of thing. So we're not just talking about people coming in the quiet of the night and assassinating James and, you know, by slicing him with a sword. We're talking about a public display of a state ordered execution. And so, and James, keep in mind also that James was a leading figure in the movement and also somewhat of a hothead, you know, to boot. He was nicknamed one of the sons of thunder by Jesus himself. So James was a, you know, fiery person in the movement. He was a leader in the movement for several years in Jerusalem. And he was said that even one of his captors was convinced of the belief in Jesus based on what James was telling him. And based on one of his captors being converted, he was executed alongside with James. You know, so James was a very important figure. And it was a jarring thing for the believers at the time, too. You know, we got to remember that, you know, there wasn't really a different thing of Christianity at this time. It was more like a subset of Judaism still. And there was this new kind of oppression, you know, post-Jesus of trying to squash this kind of sect of Judaism that believed in Jesus, the followers of the way, as they were called. And you might question, why would the people who believe in Jesus, why would this be jarring to them? Because they already seen Jesus crucified. Well, it's kind of similar to police brutality or school shootings. You know, even though they seem to be ordinary, they're still going to be jarring every time that it happens. And this was the case when it came to James. And now they're even that much more on alert when it comes to Peter, because King Agrippa is planning on making Peter a public display of execution as well. Matter of fact, right, doing it right after honoring God in the Passover, no less. And just to add an extra layer to all this, you know, it's one thing for your adversary to try to take you out because they don't share your same beliefs and values and some kind of deep, meaningful resistance. And then it's a whole nother thing for someone to try to kill you because they just want more friends. You know, you can't even publicly murder me for a significant cause. You know, so this like idea of the ordinary horrific was very much the case when it comes to Peter being in prison. And despite the ordinary horrific here, God was indeed present. Just some things to note briefly here. One is that the people were praying for Peter. They already seen what happened to James. They were really avid about praying for Peter and his deliverance. Another thing is that God really showed out on this one. You know, you think about it, you know, this angel could have just swooped in and got Peter out, you know, like magic out of prison and put him, you know, got him straight to where folks were praying for him. But didn't happen that way. You know, the angel, you know, was able to break the chains, open up the doors, pass by 16 guards, two of which were right next to Peter, and walk a couple of blocks down the street before anyone knew what was happening. You know, so I'm sure, you know, the angel could have gotten just Peter out easily, but there was something to the way things are done. And I believe that one is that I believe God wanted Peter to witness the miracle in detail. And then two, I believe that God wants us to do our part when it comes to being released from our prisons. And then lastly, we shouldn't be surprised when God answers prayer, right? They were so shocked, you know, the people who were praying were so shocked that they left Peter knocking on the door. As the story goes, when Peter gets out of prison, he goes to the place where people are praying, he knocks on the door, and the woman is so excited that, and she can't believe that it's Peter, that she actually runs back to the other folks saying, hey, Peter's at the door, and she didn't let Peter in yet, right? And so sometimes the answer to our prayers could be knocking right at the door, but sometimes we're too busy not believing our prayers will be answered, and therefore don't open the door when they actually are there. So I want to go through a few other examples of the ordinary horrific when it comes to these prisons. Now, one is going to be about slavery. You know, there could be a series of classes, a whole college major even, just on the normality of the slave trade and how integrated it was in the world. You know, if you want to get a taste of that history, I suggest reading the book I mentioned earlier, Ebony and Ivy by Craig Stephen Wilder. But I just want to express how the conditions that it was experienced by kidnapped Africans from the initial capture to the slave centers on the African coastline to the slave ships themselves. Matter of fact, in the book, there's an example of one slave ship that had took 14 months to capture enough people in order to make his voyage back. And so if you're one of those early captives, you spent 14 months just being a captive on this ship with the conditions were unbelievably horrible just before you even made the voyage to the quote unquote new world. You know, these conditions of the ships were unimaginable. We're talking about shoulder to shoulder, no space to move, waste and excrement and blood and disease, the whole nine yards. You know, so these were horrible conditions, one of the most worst prisons you can ever possibly imagine. And even when you got to where you're heading to, you know, you had this initiation upon arriving to this new land where you end up getting tortured and you end up being enslaved, not just for your generation, but for generations and generations to come. You know, specifically in the United States, 246 years in the U.S. alone from 1619 to 1865. You know, so if there's anything that can be described as ordinary horrific, it is the slave trade. So you may ask, Jeff, how is God anywhere associated with such a prison? Well, remember that our God is beyond the concept of time. What may seem like complete abandonment and persecution at a time may end up translating into freedom for others down the line. Just like with James, the brother John, who was not spared his life, you know, but death meant something because they were much more avid about their prayers. We can remember those that were not spared and find purpose in their sacrifice. With that said, I would like to take a moment to honor those that died during a voyage among this group of 257 enslaved people in 1733 on a slave ship called the Catherine. And the reason why I'm being specific, because I want to acknowledge the actual individual lives that were end up being lost as a result of this particular voyage here. In the book I read this in, reported deaths in what was to me a very powerful way. I don't know if it was intentional or not, but while there wasn't any true identifiable factors for each person outside their sex and their general age group, it still listed, you know, almost every person individually in terms of loss there. And I'll just read these losses of this voyage. Died one woman slave, a man slave, a woman, a boy, a fine man boy, a fine young man, a man, a man, a man, a man, a girl, a man, a man, a large boy, a boy, a boy, a girl, a boy, a young man, a young woman, two boys, a boy, two boys, three men, one boy, a girl, a boy. I would like to take just a moment of silence to acknowledge and remember the lives of these people who died on this voyage. May their lives and memories live on in the work for justice. I want to go through a couple other examples of the ordinary horrific. I couldn't help but to highlight Nelson Mandela, who spent 27 years in prison after a previous 5-year stint in prison before that, for fighting apartheid and fighting for human rights, democracy, and racial equality. And let's chew on that for a little bit. A man spent a total of 32 years of his life in prison for standing up for human rights, democracy, and racial equality. He was famously quoted at his sentencing saying, "It is an ideal for which I am prepared to die." Now, I don't have the time to get into the specifics of oppression in South Africa, but I can assure you that it fits the ordinary horrific category. I'll get more into how God was present through Mandela's darkest times later in the teaching. Another example I want to bring out is of the ordinary horrific is the fact that we are treating foreigners the opposite of what the Bible instructs us to treat foreigners. I'm ongoingly appalled by how this country treats people from outside this country. The Bible highlights how we're supposed to treat the stranger, but it seems like we are doing the opposite. And what also continuously shocks me is how self-righteous people are about who can, who cannot be in this country when you consider how it was taken in the first place. And again, we seem to have made the horrific ordinary. And for those following along, there is a slide of the kids who were in detention centers and people been separate from families. Now, next slide is a picture of, as maybe people might be anticipating, picture me and my grandkids. And say, well, Jeff, you know, how is this a prison or horrific or anyway? Well, I have to share something that's been happening in Clarkston, Mississippi. The children at the daycare that my grandkids go to may end up closing. And you ask why? Well, Government cuts have decreased the number of families that can leave their kids at the daycare while they go to work. And so this has already affected where two other daycares in the area are already closed. So there's a case where in this situation where one woman was bringing her child to work and leaving the child in the car so that she would not lose her job and had because she had no other place to leave her child. The cuts also affect Asia Matt and other Spring Initiative parents whose kids are going to the same daycare because by having the less revenue from these other families being able to pay for their care, it drastically increased the amount of money that our Spring kids have to pay to in order to go to the same daycare. They're looking for a donation right now, matter of fact, just to stay open. So this is just unfortunately one of just one tiny example of the pain people are and will go through with all the cuts to programs like SNAP and Medicaid, the tax subsidies for the ACA, cutting the federal workers, which by the way, African-Americans are heavily reliant on government jobs and are disproportionately affected by federal layoffs. It's one of the places where African-Americans were more likely to be treated fairly in terms of employment. So we're more affected when there are federal layoffs. And so, again, we have various types of prisons, various types of things that are binding us. But again, God is present. And my next slide is a picture of the No Kings rally that took place in Urbana, where you had a huge crowd of folks who have decided to be engaged and try to and take notice of the horror that's been going on in our country and to do something about it. You know, I applaud New Covenant for being on the forefront of these issues and not being apathetic or complicit in these types of horrors. 2 Corinthians 3:17 says, "Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom." So I believe that, you know, we all experience our personal and collective prisons as well. But we have to remember that, one, God is everywhere, knows everything, and God cares about us individually and collectively. So whatever prison you find yourself in, know that God is indeed with you. Even if the outcome seems dire or is dire, you never know what God would do with it. So thinking more collectively in times of trouble may help as well. And so what I want to leave you with is what I call Mandela's Five. Mandela had five different things where, in essence, I believe this is where God played a role in his survival of prison. One, he said he had a clear sense of purpose. And so you got to ask yourself, what is your cause? What got Nelson Mandela through was that his cause kept him going. And we as believers in Jesus, followers of the way, that believe that God's kingdom building business is our cause. Now, there may be very specific branches or leaves to that, but it's important to be able to muster through your prison by having a cause. Second is mental discipline and inner freedom. One of my favorite movies, Star Wars Rogue One, there's a scene where these guys are in prison and they're having this conversation. And one guy says, you know, there's many different types of prisons. And he feels like he was indicating that this one guy's prison follows him wherever he goes. You know, so it's really important to understand that, you know, we can end up being in prison if we don't have the right mindset, no matter where we are and what our situation is. Third thing is hope and optimism. Mandela described optimism as a weapon. As a follower of Christ, we should be pretty solid on this one. But like the praying church folks for Peter, who didn't think their prayers might have been answered, we often need those reminders. Four was solidarity and fellowship. You know, Nelson Mandela relied on his brothers in prison with him to get through those moments. They shared things. They made sure they took care of each other. That's what got them through. And we have to do the same thing in our prisons. When it comes to trying to find racial justice and reparation in this country, one of our fellowship opportunities is this National Symposium for Local and State Reparation Leaders. That's next month in December, where all those working towards reparations get more energized, seeing so many others working towards the same effort. That solidarity and fellowship is a key ingredient to working through and surviving and thriving through your prison. And then last was vision for reconciliation. So whether is it to teach others about Jesus like Peter, or to get reparations based on things like slavery, or to heal an apartheid-stricken country, like Nelson Mandela was doing, or to treat foreigners as God instructs us to, or to create a more just world that does not leave a place for kids to go to daycare, or getting through our personal prisons. Having a vision for reconciliation is vital. And most importantly is remembering the ultimate reconciliation. In Luke chapter 4:18-19, Jesus is at the temple and opens up the scroll to Isaiah and says, "The Spirit of the Lord is on me because he has anointed me to proclaim good news to the poor. He has sent me to proclaim freedom for the prisoners and recovery of sight for the blind, and to set the oppressed free, to proclaim the year of the Lord's favor." We do not have to let our prisons rule us. Our freedom is within. And remember, wherever the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom.